everyone in the tech field wants to do three things: relax, automate, and get paid. There's no other tool out there that can make that more possible than D7. Go over to foolishit.com. Don't forget to use the promo code PodNutsShow20 to save an extra 20%. PodNuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 142. I am one of your hosts, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am here once again with my good friend, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, man. Pretty good. I will say... I'm not going to say that yet. I had an interesting week. Actually, at work, I was able to do some work and be a benefit to other people. So I felt really good. I actually left the office at the end of the day, felt like I'm literally earning my money. I mean, and I know I'm weird, but I love leaving a job, a 9-to-5 job, at the end of the day and thinking I did good. The money that was spent on me today in my pay, I deserved. I did really good. I'm not going to say they need to pay me more money kind of thing unless I really feel like I am outstanding.
Yeah, a sense of accomplishment is always good.
Yep, and I'm supposed to have many more days like that in the near future.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in the near future.
Yep.
Well, speaking of being productive and getting things done, I've been holding down all my furniture all week. I'm on vacation for fear that it's going to float away.
Hey, somebody has
That's
to.
Right.
You can never be
I know,
too safe.
Man. I know. Yeah.
I'll ask, because I know you have a pastime. I will ask, did you play any interesting games, irregardless of operating system, platform, or console?
I did. I played a little bit of, there's this Beast boxing game on my Ouya. I played a little bit of Hitman Absolution on my PS3, but mainly I always, every week, at least 3 or 4 times a week, I play Super Meat Boy, which is one of my favorite games of all time. I play it on Linux. It's available. It was one of the games featured in Indie Game the Movie. So if you like fun platformers, kind of like in the vein of like Super Mario or like Mega Man 2, those guys' story was amazing. I played the game before I knew about them as people, but now that I know of them, I'm like even more into it. And there's a huge community that have built extra levels, like ridiculously hard levels. Like if the game by itself is difficult, these guys ramp it up to 15. It's just nuts. Right. So yeah, it's a never ending battle with that thing, and I just love it.
Well, you mentioned games, so before I get on to the basic. I want to thank Venstone Linux Gamecast again. I think they have ultra valuable content. Guys with real world Linux gaming experience in a lot of different ways, not just playing them. Not family friendly. Period. But they always say a game at least once a show that I literally never heard of. And the one they mentioned this time was Sorry Mario Brothers. It's not a big game. It's not a deep game. It's not a, they spent decades working on a kind of game. I literally think it's a game they made in a weekend, maybe. Something like that. Okay. The gist of the game is the game starts. You hit start. You're the princess in the castle, in the dungeon, in World 8-4. And the princess figures out she can jump. Then basically it's you playing the game instead of Mario fashion from left to right. You're playing the game from right to left, starting at World 8-4, trying to get back to the beginning of World 1-1. But not everything is completely accurate to Mario's universe. By that I mean some warps are different, some basic things are different. You could literally go through the game in less than 15 minutes. Because of how the warp and stuff is set up. But if you want, you can literally actively look for these pink coins, which makes the game harder. And it was just interesting enough for me to look at and say, it's thinking different.
I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. That just broke my heart. Because that was the somewhat premise for a game idea I had that I'm just now learning to program to make.
Oh, I'm sorry. Blame Ben Stone at Ben Stone on Twitter or Ben Stone on Google Plus. You can send him all the hate stuff you
it's
want.
Not his fault.
I'm innocent.
I mean, it's. I'm sure it's been done in other games too. But still. But yeah, I'll. Yeah. What? I'll still play it.
Yeah. Well, it's on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Have at it. Well,
I'm going to need to have it on Linux because I don't have a Windows install anymore, and my Macs are dead.
Good man.
I shot him. I put him at the wildlife safari in between some zebras, and somebody hit him with their car.
Yeah, hit him with the back of the car.
He used to be in the pre-show, people.
Exactly. Okay, now the basic. This is, no matter what, this is not going to be as good. Earlier today, I had a dear friend, good friend, literally, ask a bunch of us in Voxer in a group, what do you say to someone that says open source is no good? Now, realistically, I think 80% of the people in the chat knew exactly who he was talking about. But, you know, we just replied with little stuff here, little stuff there. You know, yeah, well, tell him not to use the internet, the TV, the phone, because it all, and his TiVo or anything, because it all has open source in it. You know, all kinds of stuff like that. But I went on a mini tirade, and I literally walked in my house after work less than 8 minutes before I sat down here to start the show, and they suggested, why don't you hook your phone up to your computer, record it off, then play it back during the show like a voicemail. Well, I didn't have time to do that. I've tried to reiterate this a couple times in public at Ohio Linux Fest last year, and I tried to reiterate it once or twice on this show since it started, and I've never said it right. On this Voxer message, I think I basically said it right. Okay. Open source. What do you quote-unquote say to someone that doesn't think open source is any good? Well, first off, you don't say anything to them because their mind's already made up, period. You don't hold up, you do not try to change people's minds. When it comes to all this stuff, Linux, open source, Windows, Mac, Linux, whatever, don't try to change someone's mind. Don't. If they ask for education that indicates open-mindedness, then you can talk to them honestly about pluses and minuses. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's the gist of the thing. Okay. You walk into a physical store. A physical store has a bunch of softwares on the shelves. The number one underlying deciding factor for 90% of the people's purchase, for 90% of the items they buy, is going to be cost driven. Okay. Cost driven. People don't want to spend a lot of money. Software companies have basic goals. Number one goal, make money. Number two goal, continue making money. It's in their business interest to give you a product that looks the best with spending the least amount of money. Okay? They want the highest profit margin possible, which means they're going to do everything they can to take a product, make it appear better than it is, sound better than it is, make it sound like it can even do more than it can, to give you the impression so you spend more money. That is the goal. No getting around it, okay? And to purposely cause lock-in so you buy their next version, okay? Mm-hmm. Format types, export types, import types. They change the workflow just enough to try to get you hooked into a way of doing things so you quote-unquote need their product. The people say, I need my Quicken. Why? Well, because they know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
That's pre-programmed, pre-thought-out lock-in by a vendor. Okay, now, open source store. If open source store existed, you would walk in. We're going to say, hypothetically, for this sake, everything is free. Open source does not mean free, people, okay? But hypothetically, in this store, because 99% of all the software we can go pick from in the quote-unquote open source world, a.k.a. the free software world, is free. So, how do they sell you a product? Okay, they have to sell you a product based on a couple different factors, and each developer or development team has to make a choice. Do we want a pretty graphical user interface? Do we want the ability to do X type of features, whether it be imports, whether it be outports, outputs, whether it be save as, whether it be network capable? All these different things are little features they can work on. They can also work on being constantly up to date if they have to rely with other services like Twitter or Facebook. they can choose to rely on this as a rock solid, stable product. Okay. They can work on it being a long term support product. There's all these different little things that they can focus on to make their product better. Their goal is not to give you the illusion that it's better than it is. Their illusion is to try to win you over. Okay. That's what their goal is. Their goal, sorry, is try to win you over. Okay. 90%+ of the software development done in the free software world does not try to do everything for you, okay, and do it perfect. They try to focus on those things and do them good. So, what's better? And that's what these kind of people, when they come up to you and say, open source is no good, then you have to stop and think, well, they think closed source is better, okay? And right there is where I stop the conversation. For anyone to tell you something is better and they don't follow it up, they are, in a sense, ignorant, and they are trusting on your ignorance just to blindly believe them. There is no such thing as this is better. Proprietary is better. Free software is better. There is no better. There's better for a certain task. There's better for a certain need. There's better for a certain niche. There's better for a certain workflow, but there's not just better. Okay. And I'll say the only time we as end users win is with competition, diversity, and disruption. Okay. So every time your next door neighbor goes out and buys a Mac computer, every time your cousin goes out and buys a home router that costs $300, every time your father-in-law, whatever, goes out and buys something from Microsoft, thank them. Thank them immensely. Because every dollar those other people spend in closed source software drives open source free software development to become better. Without the competition back and forth, one of them will stall and eventually become just dry, useless. If there was no Mac OS X, if there was no Microsoft Windows tomorrow, Linux would not enhance at the rate that it currently is. It would not keep getting, quote unquote, better for certain things because it wouldn't need to, period. Okay. You as an end user have to make choices, and your choices are based upon your needs. See, Nightwise, Nightwise.com, he makes the choice of, I'm going to take this argument I have with myself on what to use, and he takes it up a level to where he doesn't care. He basically has three computers in front of him at all time, a Windows, a Mac, a Linux, and he decides what's most important to him is not the operating system. It's not the software. It's not the creator of the software. It's how much time does it take me to get this task done? And that's a choice as a human being he made, and he goes through, and he lives with, and he utterly believes in. And you can't tell him he's wrong, because he's not. That's the way he works on a computer. I have three monitors in front of me right now. They all three run Linux. It was a choice I made. And I tried to do all of my work on all three of these computers. And so far, I've been very successful. Very little actual effort involved. I don't think any more than on Windows or Mac. Just different effort. You know? So there is no right and wrong. In the end of ends, there is no right and wrong. In the end of ends, there is no better or best. It's all perspective. And in the universe we live in today, perspective is truth. How you interface with this is your truth and your reality in your universe today. I just like to try to help people understand the benefits to open source and free software. Closed source has its own benefits. Mac OS, OS X has its own benefits. I choose the benefits of free software. And it's because I'm biased. I believe in the end, the only thing that's going to be long-term successful is not a company, is not a product line. It's the mentality of free software. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Doesn't matter. In my reality, I'm already right.
Well, you make some good points, and I think that we should take that clip and have it be something for future generations to listen to, because I literally, as I this is terrible for me to admit this, but as I'm listening to it, I literally zoned out and I thought I was listening to a podcast.
I was like, sorry, oh wait, that wasn't my intention.
No. I mean, I'm here with you every single word of the way. I was just like, man, that's some profound stuff. So on, not necessarily on the flip side of that coin, but if what was the initial question that you're supposed to answer? Like, if the person comes up to you and says,
well, see, a person said to this guy blanketly, open source software sucks. And he also constantly insists all consumer grade products suck and you have to get enterprise grade hardware and you have to, and you can only rely on closed source software.
So,
and when someone comes up to you like that, don't argue with them. Don't convince them.
No. You, I don't know how many of you know about Aikido, the martial art, but it's using your opponent's force against them. So whenever I had, and I've switched from Windows to Mac, and then from Mac to Linux, and then from iOS to Android. So I've had, you know, and well, actually from Windows Mobile to iOS and then to Android. So I've always had friends and close people to me at that point in transition that sort of come at me, you know, with a similar question just like that. And what I always ask them, I sort of let them vent, let them ask the initial question, because really it's just bait. To get you into an argument. I use their own force against them. I say, oh, so okay, so Dora, ask me that question that you were supposed to ask.
Tell me how open source doesn't suck.
Oh.
And that's what he basically said.
So he asked for specific reasons.
He said it sucks.
Okay.
It's useless.
Well, what I usually do in those situations is I ask them, so you think it sucks? Can you give me some reasons as to why it does suck? Because obviously...
Number one?
Hold on. Obviously, I will get to that, but obviously they've formed an opinion already.
Yep.
So, yeah, much like what Dora's saying, you can't argue with them. One of the best things I ever heard on a podcast, and this is actually a comedy discussion podcast years ago, and it's one of the things I live by now. You can't talk stupid people into making smart decisions. You can trick them, but you can't talk them into it. And
I'll say, everybody's stupid about something. It's being aware that you are stupid about something.
Yes, but normally when I wouldn't expect you to be that narrow-minded about something when you're so open-minded about many other things. You know what I mean? Usually, in my personal experience, someone that bitey and that narrow-minded and that sort of close-minded is usually that way in many other things in their life. And it's not that, yes, I believe this, but it's that I'm trying to tear you down a little bit by telling you that what you're using is garbage, or what you believe in is garbage, and you should adopt my way. And you, especially people listening to this podcast, if you are using Linux now, or if you are, or BSD or whatever, or are thinking about making the transition, you're going to have a lot of those people in your life sort of look down on you as like, well, what are you doing? You know? But ultimately, yes, it is your choice. It is your perspective. It's also how you perceive how you want to walk in life and use this software, what it's going to get done for you. But if anybody comes at you with something like that, have them explain to you in detail their opinion, and I guarantee you 9 times out of 10 they're not going to be able to give you details, which means that it's based on nothing. So or
they're just lying.
Right. So at that point you can say, well, if you ever want to sit down and have a discussion as to why I like it, if you want real facts, let's go have a cup of coffee sometime, and you schedule that appointment or that meeting for another time and place. Instead of having it right there, because they, if someone comes up to you like that, they usually want to have an argument right there. Either it's in front of a group of people, or it's at a situation they've planned. So you're taking it to another area, and you're going to be a little bit more ready for it. But yeah, every time I've offered that, though, they never take me up on it.
Of course not. And what I typically do whenever I get that kind of confrontation is I just let them vent. Go ahead and vent. It obviously makes you feel better, so keep it up. And because the first time with this person, I made the mistake of saying, What? How? Why is closed source better? He said, because open source is not secure. I'm shutting up.
Yeah.
I'm shutting up because obviously he has no concept of what the word secure means. He thinks because it's open source and everybody can see it, it's insecure. And the thing is, he's smart. He's hell of a smart kind of smart. He's just by choice ignorant on certain topics. And that's okay because nobody knows everything. I know I don't, you know. And I'll just say, I only talk to people the way I talk to you and the way I talk on this podcast, to people that I know up front are open. And I don't want to say open-minded because to me, open-minded is just a catchphrase. I heard a podcast saying this, I believe it was Mark Cockrell, Everything Linux. He said something it just struck right home to me. I mean, literally just hit me right in the side of my head like a brick. He said, I love having conversations with people that don't agree with me because it always makes me stop and think, why do I have my stance the way I have my stance? When you have back and forth with people, when it's truly opposing views, what the real goal of that as a human being is supposed to be for you to reevaluate and to listen to the other person, because no decision is final. The only constant in this universe is change. And I only believe what I believe about something because my experience off of it. Somebody else has different experiences off of it. And when they're knowledgeable and they're educated and they're, you know, dare I say educated talkers. And when I say that, I just mean they have the ability to communicate with normal words. You both literally end up that conversation smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Smarter, sometimes measurably smarter. It doesn't mean your view has to change. It doesn't mean your view doesn't have to change. It just means you will be better educated. Because I have a guy at work right now, Mike. His name is Mike. I love chatting with him. I don't care what we talk about. I don't care if we talk about time travel. I don't care if we talk about sports. Doesn't matter. I just like talking to him because I know he's going to say a couple of things that he might not realize, but I don't know. And I'll pick up on them, you know. That's the kind of stuff that I love. And that's why, honestly, doing podcasts with smart fellas, dude, it's easy. It's easy, you know. Going to work and talking to coworkers, oh, mm-hmm. That's hard. Oh, dude, I got blown away. I'm jealous. You got to meet multiple people who listen to shows.
Yes, I did.
And I still hate you for
that's
that.
Fine.
Let me just make that clear.
I'm cool.
I literally hate you for that.
That's cool.
I haven't met anybody. I've had Mitch come to my house. I consider Mitch a friend first and foremost. Mitch Heyman from Geeksters.
Mitch the gentleman Heyman.
Friend first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Versus a fan. You know what I mean? He's a friend.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy at my work always comes by my cube once every 3 days, and he stops and talks to me about Ingress. I know Ingress. I can't play it. I don't have the time to play it or the gas money to play it. But he always stops and talks to me about it, and I find it fascinating because it is a universe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, the first thing he said today, he stopped by and said, hey, man, you never told me that you were famous. I just looked around. I said, I don't know who you're talking about. He said, you. I said, I'm not famous. He said, yeah, I went to this meetup last night over in, you know, this town nearby with where like 18 of us level 8s met up, and we were going to go, you know, cause havoc. And I said, yeah, I talked to this guy at my job about Ingress. And he said, yeah, who? And he said, I think his name is Steve McLaughlin. And the other guy said, oh, the door-to-door geek. And I was like, why can't I meet that guy? But I didn't. The other guy did. No matter what, that's a kind of little stupid thing. He for instance, he didn't say, oh, that jerk door-to-door geek.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? He said door-to-door geek, not that jerk. So that made me feel better.
Well, I got to say, out of the two of us, I think I'm the one that's more approachable. You come off as kind of like a fear-mongering ogre.
Yes,
with your, he has forearms like Popeye, except there's no anchor on it. It's just a picture of his face screaming at you. Yeah.
And I love onions.
Yeah. No, I'm
okay now.
So before we transition from that, I don't think I mentioned this already, but my shout out of the week, I'm going to do this now so I don't forget, goes to Chuck Litchfield, who is the one of our listeners that I met in person.
Oh, yeah.
That there was referencing that he hates me for. And yeah, it was funny because Chuck ordered a Chromecast. Right, and he posted screen cap of his UPS tracking like delivery program, right? And I saw it, and I was at work, and it was weird because it was the zip code in city and state that I work in, and I was like, "Am I looking at my UPS tracker? What's the deal here?" And then I get on Google Talk. I'm like, "Hey Chuck, do you live in Salem?" He's like, "Yes." It's like, "Well, I work in Salem," and literally we were just like, "Oh my god, that's so funny!" And then the next day he came in and visited me at work. And we hung out for a little bit, but he brought his Chromecast in, brought his Chromebook in. We had a good like 20-minute conversation, all sorts of some projects he has at home. But yeah, I told him I want to get him on a show, maybe this one, but to share some stories. He's got some good stories, and he's got some good tech setups at home. But yeah, shout out goes to you, Chuck. It was a great meeting you in person, and I unlike the ogre here, will meet people in person. I don't even charge for anything.
Well, super quick. That was a show I was thinking about a long time ago doing, where we just have people on where they just talk about their home setup. And when I say that, I don't mean their home workstation setup. I mean their home setup that they're proud of, whether it be a home theater PC, NASs, kids' computers, whatever, anything they call their home setup.
Yeah, no, he's got some good stuff set up in his home, and he's got a great story about a home theater PC. But I don't want to allude to it whatsoever. He'll have to come on the show.
Gotcha. Now we have a couple links in here.
Yeah.
Did that one come from you?
Yep, sure did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm so confused lately.
Yeah. Obviously, with everything that's going on right now, everybody's a little bit more conscious about the communication they have online, where their email is stored, how they're securing their files locally and in the cloud. But let's say you have some files that you want to get rid of. Obviously, you know, we can, you know, triple wipe the drive per government standards to consider it, you know, legally completely wiped. But For those of you, and this isn't just for, you know, tinfoil hat people. This could literally be like a customer donated a machine to you, and you want to wipe the drive and then repurpose it and make sure that whoever you're giving it to can't access any old data. But there's I found a great article on how to securely delete hard drive data with secure-delete tools. And it's literally just a set of tools that you download, and you can get it from Ubuntu, Debian, and Linux, basically any Debian flavor. You just do sudo apt-get install secure-delete. And it gives you a large tool set, and you can go through and you can really, really make sure that you can scrub it completely clean. And you can use this on, you know, physical drives, USB drives. Obviously, that's physical too. But kind of go above and beyond the software that you might be using that may have come from a hard drive manufacturer or some other open source alternatives. But I just thought that this was kind of neat to see and how easy it is. I actually installed it myself. I just found some old drives in my garage today when I was searching for some XLR cables for a setup I'm doing, and I'm going to use this on those, do a before and after, and I'll report back. But yeah, it was a simple little tool, a very good tutorial, and we have a link in the show notes. So if that's something you guys would be interested in, definitely check it out.
Dude, great find. This looks like what they call a meta package.
Which means
you install one thing, you get multiple of tools.
Yep. Yeah, it's more like think of it as a toolbox, not just a single program.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great find. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of thing. And, okay, you don't have to be paranoid. You don't have to be a terrorist. It's not a question of what do you have to hide when we talk about these kind of things. I will quote, I believe, Steve Gibson and the smart, quote-unquote, security researchers out there. It isn't about what you have to hide. It's about, do you completely trust the people who might have access to your hard drive?
Right.
That's what it comes down to. I personally don't trust any company, organization to do what's right every time they get their hands on something. So I'm downloading secure-delete.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll both test it out and report back, hopefully before OLF, but maybe a little bit after.
Right. And a super, super quick side comment to this. This has been mentioned on multiples of podcasts. I'm going to mention it here, too, because security, secure, private came up. Technology out there called BitMessage, BitMessage. Yeah, you know what I mean. BitMessage. Mm-hmm. Can't even spell tonight, Cody. The only way I can explain this is utterly secure, direct P2P messaging. It can do more than just messaging, i.e. there's no such thing as secure email unless you both on each side do a lot of work. This is kind of like a solution that doesn't need a server in the middle, i.e. where all the emails are stored. And you don't have to worry about hosting your own email server, which a lot of ISPs blocks. This is called BitMessage. If a large enough contingent of Linux or the rest of us says that's how they would like to communicate with this show, if I can, which I believe I can, I will set up a BitMessage account, which is something we can run from a USB drive on Windows, Kodi, as a portable app or as a Linux application, which I believe also does not require any installation. You just run it.
Oh, wow.
Where we can both put in the same key, mm-hmm. and we would both have access to the same inbox. So,
oh, very cool.
If this is a way listeners would like to communicate with us, say something. If not, don't say something, because then I won't install and run it, unless I have a need by listeners, you know.
Yeah, but no, I would love to at least test this out, because you know, you're with everything that's going on, you know, in the news, with you know, our liberties, whatever you want to call it, all sorts of alternatives, whether it be through email, instant messaging, you know, video messaging, audio messaging, just direct communication, in order to make it more secure, or to make it more direct and controllable. You're seeing, I mean, articles every single day on every site I hit every day. It's always, hey, and then there's this thing you can try too. And I think that once it sort of calms down for a bit, or at least once we start to test some of these new pieces of software with which to accomplish these goals, that the ones that are actually worth it are going to rise to the top. And then we're going to be able to latch onto that and say, okay, yes. Because, yeah, I mean, if there's 10 different, you know, options for each avenue, then it's like, no, you got to send me an email through this, because I'm on this secure service now. Well, I'm on this one, so you should come to this one, you know? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of wade through it all and find out which ones are going to be around for the long haul.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll say, I now am old. I must be old and grumpy. Like, get off my lawn kind of grumpy.
Oh, yeah.
Because now, anytime anything says it's secure by default, I don't believe it. Because you can say, it's so easy to say, hey, you know, this podcast, Cody, we're secure. there's no validation. There's no badge you get. There's no certificate of being secure that you get. So I, by default, now don't trust them. Steve Gibson already said, thank you, Martin. He is going to do a podcast on this, and he will literally dig into it as much information that is possible, which I believe this is completely GPL software, i.e. all the codes in the open, and he will determine whether or not this is, and he's not going to say, he typically does not say blanketly, this is secure. He will either say this is secure enough, or this is pretty secure, or this really isn't secure, kind of thing. So he's going to look at it, evaluate it, determine it, and I will say, last week, as of live right now, last week's show was not published. Steve Gibson also did mention how that basically he doesn't completely utilize or use the Tor network, because it's not TNO, mm-hmm. trust no, mm-hmm. it's trust the Tor network. So just to prove to myself I wasn't crazy, I was happy that he hit on that topic too, I'll say.
Well, good. I'm glad that you're not losing any more sleep over it.
Oh, well, no, I sleep just fine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But no, I hadn't heard of that, probably because I'm behind in a lot of my podcasts. I'm up on my Breaking Bad, though. I'll tell you that.
Well,
17 episodes in 3 days. 17 episodes in 3 days, dude. Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll get caught up on podcasts tomorrow. Okay. So, let's see, we did BitMessage. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. This is a good one. Now, Door, remember the tool about making your own ISOs that is no longer supported? What was it called again? RemasterSys?
RemasterSys, right. Yes, sir.
So, RemasterSys was great because you could literally customize your own ISO, especially if it is good in environments where you're having to do a lot of reinstalls or just trying to sort of pare down an ISO in order to make it either less of a download on your side or to just have it be a little more customized that we can kind of add to it, you know, peel away. Well, this tool reminds me a little bit of that, but kind of from the other perspective. I found a great tool called IsoMaster. IsoMaster is a tool where you can go in and actually reduce the size of an existing ISO by peeling stuff out of it.
What?
Yeah. So let's say you have the newest version of OpenSUSE, and it's 4.1 gigs, right?
Right.
But you only have a 4 gig USB drive. And you know just as well as I do, through great education from Scott Molden, myharddrivedied.com, check it out, that even if you have a 4 gig USB stick, when you first, I mean, fresh out of the package, you plug it in, it's like 3.84 gigs or less, exactly. Right? So it's never 4 gigs. Yeah. When you buy a 250 gig drive, it's never 250, it's like 221 or whatever, okay? So let's say you want to install OpenSUSE, but you only have this 4 gig stick, and let's say it has like 3.6 gigs available because it's brand new or whatever. Well, you can actually use IsoMaster to go in and peel items out of that ISO in order to reduce the size of the ISO file.
The ISO file itself?
Yes.
What?
You can use this program to extract files from an ISO, add files to an ISO, and create a bootable ISO, all in a graphical user interface. It can open both ISO and NRG files, but it can only save as ISO.
That is like voodoo.
I know. Well, but, I mean, if you think, because some of the, I mean, it, I whenever I think of distros and ISO files, I always think of like the kitchen sink or bare bones. You know what I mean? It's never like that sweet, you know, magical spot like the porridge is just right, like for the midsize. It's either I'm trying to make one for people with awful internet connections or to just want small file sizes, smaller imprints for older machines, or it's here's every single option you could ever have for our distribution, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, like my thing would be, I always install distro, but the first things I always install, Kupfer, FileZilla, these other things, I don't have to now wait to install.
You could put them on.
To put them on.
Mm-hmm.
I literally download the ISO and I can put them on the ISO.
Yep.
And then every time I take that ISO to a different box to install, I already have Kupfer, whatever, I can't tell.
You did it right.
And FileZilla without having to install them. I personally did not think that was even possible or plausible. Seriously, when I say voodoo, I mean something that makes no sense.
Well, you got to think about it. If you have a program that can access the ISO at its base core, I mean, if you think, I'm just throwing this out there, but I mean, hypothetically, think of something huge like Ubuntu Studio, right?
Yeah.
What language do you speak, Steve?
Hopefully English.
Yeah, okay. So you probably don't need all those language packs, right?
Oh, true.
Strip those out immediately. That'll at least save you a few megs, a few hundred megs. In some cases, I mean, talk to HP. Yeah. They know all about language packs. But so if you think of those things that, obviously, if I'm using it for me or if I'm distributing it in North America, right, like I can strip everything but that out. And then if you start to go through and think too, well, maybe certain hardware support. If I know that I'm only running Intel hardware and I'm never running AMD hardware, pull all that out too. Okay. There are several items, and I haven't investigated it all yet, but I mean, there are several different items that if you really get used to viewing how they're laid out in an ISO, that you can realize, well, I don't need a lot of this. And you can save hundreds of megs or even a gig or two.
Yeah.
So, And I mean, if you also think of some of the bigger distros or even some of the smaller distros, you know, they might include Chromium versus Firefox, or they might include those three art programs, or that one word processor that you don't like, but you'd rather use, you know, LibreOffice, so you put that in there instead.
Right?
Yeah, it's uh, it because the last episode we talked about remaster says you were saying I really want a tool like this to come back, and it was kind of sad because we got an email or two the week after and then a couple weeks after saying I just discovered this tool, it's awesome, but now it's dead and I hate it and it's so sad. But this sounds like a great alternative to that.
Yeah, I'll say in some ways better.
Perhaps. There's only one way to find out.
Well, because Remaster Sys, you literally have to install an operating system. Then
oh, correct.
Remaster Sys,
yep,
against the installed operating system.
It's quicker.
With this, you there's one less step taken out. You have a slight bit less options, I think. But this is something that I know I can definitely need, use, utilize, abuse.
Definitely.
Wow, heck, dude, I don't want to say that's the best find in a while, but that's a really good find, man. I definitely need to buy you a beer for that one.
I will let you.
Good.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to this because I downloaded a bunch of ISOs this week because I'm on vacation. And I'm actually blowing away a lot of my systems tomorrow. I have to. It's my last day, and. one of them I downloaded was OpenSUSE, in fact, and there's like their master package, which comes with all the desktop environments. And I haven't run KDE in a while, but I would like to have the option to, but whenever I'm testing a distro personally that I know that like, okay, this is coming recommended, I've used it before, but it's a new iteration, I want to try it again. For instance, I don't want to run KDE in a live environment personally, that's just my choice, but to have to be able to potentially switch back and forth on this ISO from KDE to maybe GNOME 3, right? Much like you can do with if you install different desktop environments, you know, after the fact. Like I have XFCE running on my Ubuntu 13.04 system. But if you can go through and peel out those DEs from the ISO and save yourself some space and just leave the one or the two or three that you want to, you know, switch back and forth between, or if there's one that's not included, you can throw in there after the fact. Heck yeah, man.
Yeah, and I don't know if I said this, it literally just hit me in the face. If you tinker at all, if you play at all, if you go outside of the daily using of a computer at all, highly encourage you, install a second desktop completely different than the first.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using Unity, install KDE Desktop. You don't have to use it. Just install it. Because if you tinker and you play and you test and you go outside the box and you see things and you try things, there might come a day where you try to log into your computer and it doesn't log in right.
Yep.
Where you still, but you could still log in to the KDE desktop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, because I've done that. I did it like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, my I can't log into my Unity desktop anymore on this machine because I've never heard that.
Forked it.
I've never heard the error message ding go off so many times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyhow. Cool. But yeah. Definitely looking forward to trying that.
Now, I personally, so this is not, blanketly for everyone, but I personally took great offense this past week or so with people talking about the Hand of Thief, quote unquote, Linux Trojan. Okay.
Is this the one with all the banking stuff that everybody's terrified about?
Yeah, this is the one that everyone is absolutely freaking out over, okay?
Okay.
Because on one of those websites that are eBay-like that host and sell exploits, Trojans, malware, escalation attacks, all this kind of stuff, someone posted a Linux vulnerability called Hand of Thief. That's supposed to work on a couple different distro bases, a couple different browsers to intercept all HTTP and HTTPS traffic via a virtual DNS entry to basically steal data. Okay, A, just because someone has something for sale does not mean it's real. Number one, I could easily post on Craigslist, I'm selling the Brooklyn Bridge. Does that mean I'm selling the Brooklyn Bridge? No. It actually doesn't. Okay, no, it doesn't. Two, just because a meteorite has the possibility of hitting me, of hitting my house or hitting me as I walk to the store, does not mean I'm not going to walk to the store or I'm going to run to the store in a zigzag fashion screaming at the top of my lungs. Okay. If this is genuine and real, if, big if, right now, you literally have to click a link, download something, double-click something, hit run in terminal, type in your pseudo account, hit OK, let it install. This is not like a drive-by attack where you just go past a website and you're infected. This is something either A, you have to actively go out and download from a nefarious or corrupted source, or B, someone will actively have to hack into a repository of software like the Ubuntu repository, Debian repository, Fedora repository, and then plant this code in there undetected. Just because something is possible does not mean anyone should react to it. Now, in the real world, if a bridge has no railing, we should prevent that because somebody will go off the side of the railing. Someone will drive or walk right off the side and die. In the software realm, probability is a word that we as humans really don't comprehend the length and the depth of that word. And I will say, just like on Android, Trojans, malware, in the truest sense of the word on Android, doesn't really exist. It exists, but it doesn't really exist. This thing might exist, but as far as I'm concerned, it really doesn't exist because there is not a single recorded case of this on a computer. On Android devices outside of China, I do not know of a single recorded case of genuine Trojan or malware on Android. Now, there's plenty of unwantedware and adware type stuff, but not malware or Trojans or viruses on Android. This is FUD. That's all I can say. Until this becomes real, until this becomes something discovered on people's computers, this is FUD. And I'm not trying to say Linux is perfect, Linux is great. I'm saying this is basically nothing more than an idea, a concept. Because no one's seen it. It only costs $2,000. Okay? That's it, $2,000. If these big name websites wanted to, why don't they buy a copy, evaluate it, hand it over to a research team? It's only $2,000.
There you go.
Honestly, not trying to sound dumb, Podnuts? Podnuts is not actively going out and having AdSense and having all this stuff all over our website and taking money from everybody that throws money at Podnuts? Because let me tell you something, more than a couple of people, I tell them to keep their money. Okay? I'm virtually able to buy this right now myself. And not from my 9-to-5 job, not from my wife, not from fixing people's computers, but from Podnuts. So I don't want to hear about this from people, companies, industries like ZDNet, who could easily afford this to give to a research team for a real answer. You want to get a lot of clicks? You be the person that spends that $2,000 and hands it over to a research team so you get a exclusive report on what this actually is. Until then, or until it's found on a computer, I don't want to know about it. Call me grumpy. Don't want to know about it.
Keep off the lawn, kids. He just mowed it.
Yeah, it's... You know, ancient aliens. I mean, I don't know what more to say.
Well, here's the thing. Once a platform starts to gain popularity, any platform, doesn't matter, you're going to start to see all the critics come out.
And
start to pick away at it. Well, what about this? Well, oh, we found this one thing. Are you using that thing? Oh, you better be careful. And you better tell all your friends, too. Well, what does it actually do? I don't know, but I read about it. Right. This one site, I read about it, and it's terrifying.
How to say this? I can't wait for the day when there's a real virus on Linux or Trojan on virus. I can't wait for that day. I'm going to cheer that day. I'm getting drunk that day because Linux made it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that desirable enough.
Right.
That's all there is to it.
And I too will get drunk that day. For that, at least I'll have a valid excuse, you know? I mean, that's always good. It's always good. But yeah, I've literally, I had to ask you in the beginning, is it that banking thing? Because I've seen it at least 10 times in the past few days, and I don't even read it. I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it might as well be Chicken Little. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. Right, the sky is falling. That's what these people are like.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some of them only do it so they can mention it, so they can get clicks, so they can get activity, so they can get people to talk about them. And some people do it legitimately because they want to start conversations. Okay, not many people are out there like that. Some of them are. And I really do respect those people because I like to hear opinions about this kind of thing. How plausible, how real, how dangerous. But until it actually becomes real, I'm going to click everything possible and install everything possible. I've been trying to get infected. I have people who I'm in a circle where once in a while they hit a bad site and, you know, it has an infection on it. I instantly jump on my phone and I click that link. I instantly go home and I click on that link, begging. I want to be the first guy who gets a real genuine infection on Android or Linux just so I can say I did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there. This is popular enough, desirable enough for people to actually want to hack and infect.
Well, and there is value to having the conversation before and sort of making yourself knowledgeable. But like you said, those valuable conversations or analysis of these problems, these supposed problems that are popping up, are very few and far between from what's actually out there. It's usually the same soundbite from you know, whoever discovered it, and then the reporter's analysis of what might happen. They look into their crystal ball. Well, here's what's going to happen. Everybody's going to go back to using Windows. And Windows 8.1 in October, I mean, we'll have that new start menu, so that'd be great.
Can't wait.
Yeah, and by then we'll probably be running Android on the Surface tablet, so that'll be good. And
I would love to be able to do basically a Security Now type podcast about all the exploits and vulnerabilities being taken advantage of on Linux. I would, because I would like to see dynamically, interactively, how these things happen, who does them, and how they get fixed by open source communities. But I can't do that now.
Well, if that happens, Dor, I'll be your main man.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you gonna buy me a beer?
Yeah, man.
Sweet.
I'll get you one of those Russ Winter the Beast beers.
Ah, sounds good to me.
The price is right.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's see here. We got a couple more here. And these were yours, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, these were holdovers from weeks and weeks ago that got bumped. I'm not an excuse-driven fellow, but I will say, I literally got in the door like 8 minutes before we started this podcast. So one of them is a link I actually got from a viewer, a listener, someone on Twitter, on Google+, I don't know. I thank that person immensely, but I don't know who it is. 10 free Linux eBooks. Now, I have found in the past multiple pages like this, and they're usually much more, thousands, hundreds, whatever.
Hmm.
And a certain percentage of the links are dead, or they're extremely outdated books. They're free, yes, and you can learn from them, yes, but they're not typically the best. I will say these are some of the best freely downloadable Linux-related ebooks I've seen, and it's on a site called royal.pingdom.com. Just called 10 Free Linux E-Books. Personally, I think they're actually kind of interesting books.
Oh, yeah.
The first one, Advanced Linux Programming. Need I say more? That's pretty advanced. Programming. Linux. Bang. If that interests you, you should already be typing in that URL. GNU Emacs Manual. I don't want to learn any text editor that complicated. I don't have the time to right now, but I know people out there do, and there are certain people out there that literally live in Emacs because you can. And if you would like to, or that sounds interesting to you, this to me sounds like a great start. GTK GNOME application development, haven't had a chance to look at it, but if it is not pretty new about GTK 3, the book, I don't want to say is useless. There's going to be a lot of holes in the knowledge in that one. And they got a couple more. Java application development in Linux. If you get this, I will personally come to your house and like stomp on your foot really hard. Because Java's bad. Linux device drivers, Linux kernel in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. I am not even going to read the back cover on that book because it'll be too confusing to me.
Your eyes will spin around like they're stuck inside a slot machine.
Yes. One book, though, I am going to check out, Linux Network Administrator's Guide. And it's not because I want to be a Linux administrator or network administrator, but it's because I host a show now on this network called The Server Show, and I would need to have at least a monochrome of knowledge on the topic because I don't right now, and other people on the podcast are really doing all of the content, and I'm kind of the dumb guy that says, what does that mean? What? So I would like to learn something, so I'm going to take a look at this ebook, see if I can get anything out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's definitely more there. One of them, I will say, Cody, give me a second.
Yeah, another one of the books further down the list that I'm interested in is the Linux command line. And I don't do nearly much stuff, as much stuff in the command line as I should, or that I want to, but it's definitely something that, and I'm actually downloading the book right now that I can use. And I already stand to download two of these since we started talking about it, but they are released under a Creative Commons. You can get the PDFs for free. Do you have a physical copy of one of them?
I thought I did.
Oh, okay.
I have the book.
Oh, yeah.
How Linux Works. I will tell this on the other show I do that has Linux content sometimes in it. I told people if they came up to me and said something, they would get something for free. Someone from Linux from the rest of us, if you want this book, How Linux Works, a good couple hundred pages long, I will bring it to OLF. I'll say this, if you promise me you will make a $2 a month donation pledge to theacf.co, I will give this to you. If you already do pledge $2, I will ask you, will you please pledge $2 more a month to the acf.co, and I will gladly give you this book. I trust people on their word. It's over a 300-page book, and I will give this to you outright.
Yeah, it looks like an awesome book.
Yes, honestly, I was at this store, and I literally looked through the table of contents, and I looked through, like, the first chapter, the verbiage, the highlighting of stuff, so you knew if you were reading, was it a command? Was it a tip? Was it the main content I liked? So I bought it, and then I remembered I don't read, so I should give it away.
Okay.
Done.
By the way,
thing in the basement.
If you are recently installing Ubuntu 11.04, I have a great 400-page book for you. That I just found, that I also bought in the bookstore. That I'm definitely going to read this, and I didn't. And God, that was two years ago.
I have an Ubuntu book somewhere around here. The best thing about Ubuntu is it's based upon Debian, okay? Mm-hmm. An Ubuntu book literally from 4 years ago is still probably 80%
relevant,
useful, functional. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, yes, you can use it as a coaster or a doorstop, but there is stuff you can learn in it, but you gotta do some page flipping from time to time.
Yeah, you gotta get in there and do it.
Yep. Last link. I'm only mentioning this because I did have a listener or two email me about this in the past, and the one, I don't want to say flaw, but the one thing on Linux that can really pluck people's last nerves is you have a laptop, okay? You install three different versions of Linux on it. Fedora, OpenSUSE, Ubuntu, or Debian, Slackware, OpenSUSE, whatever. And you will see a very definitive different amount of maximum time one battery charge will last. On one distro, 2 hours. The next distro, 2.5 hours. Next distro, 4 hours. And it's really not something anyone can answer except say, well, one's better optimized. One's not as well optimized. One has better support of your hardware fans and heat. But it's really hard to exactly nail down. But I will say this article on Ubuntu Geek, which I will say, I used to really go to that site a lot. It still has plenty of very good content, quality content, well laid out content, but useful content. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're a little slow.
Well, it's dead. They're no longer posting new content to it, as far as I know.
Oh, well then,
before
they take the site down.
You're damn right. No, yeah, the last thing I posted, that they posted there, if I'm not mistaken, was from October 2012.
Ah.
A little dated.
Well, this is from May 6, 2013.
What?
Hmm?
Well,
UbuntuGeek.com, at least this link I have.
Okay. I believe
This is a little bit of a step-by-step of things you can do in Ubuntu to extend your battery life. I highly encourage someone who does run a Ubuntu-based distribution and wants to try to get more life out of that same battery, you need to check this out. You absolutely need to. Because better battery life is always possible. Again, with open source software, free software, there are certain features that people focus on. Ubuntu did not focus on making the laptop battery performance as a high priority. Does that mean it's bad? Mm-mm. Does that mean something else is better? Mm-mm. Depends on you as a user, what your desire is, how high it is in your priority list. The plus to open source software, you can fix it yourself.
Get that right.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the, what's it called? I really can't think tonight. I don't know. I can't even think right tonight, Cody.
That's okay.
I haven't drank.
Not yet. There's still time. Or we could just make up for it in, 3 weeks?
Oh, you betcha, Larry. Ah, yeah. Yeah, you betcha.
Real quick, though, before we end off and before we head into emails, I wanted to say happy birthday to Debian.
Yes.
Turned 20 years old today.
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
Can't buy liquor.
I know.
At least in the state of Maryland here in the U.S., they can't buy alcohol.
Well, just come hang out with me and Martin. We'll drive him over the border to Canada. It'll be fine.
Exactly.
Actually, how insensitive of me to assume that Debian is a man. I'll just say that.
I want to say the guy who created it based it off their kid's name, and I cannot remember what the kid's name is.
Okay.
I don't know. But I will say, it's one of those weird things in life. You stop and think for a second and say, man, 20, man, that ain't that old. You know? But then you stop and think about it in software years.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, damn,
yep,
that thing's old.
Yep.
You know? So, came an unbelievably long way. The Debian community themselves, I think, are among the most powerful, influential, and productive communities in software development, period. I'm happy they do what they do.
Me too. Well, happy birthday. I will walk by a cake in a store soon. I will think of how you would have enjoyed it if you could consume physical cake. But beware, it is a lie.
Yes, like, the cake is always a lie.
It is a lie. Okay, Dor. I think that was actually it for our notes.
I think so too, sir.
We're going to do one email this week. because we're kind of running short on time here. Rick Crouch wrote in to us. Rick is a listener of ours. He's been writing in, and he sent this in and gave me quite a chuckle here. Rick writes, I was looking at the MIT OpenCourseWare site, a great resource for free college-level courses on many topics, and checked out the Introduction to Java Programming course notes. In it, it gives a long set of instructions for installing the Java SDK and the Eclipse IDE on Windows, then has an equally long set of instructions for Mac. Then it had this. Under Linux, it says, if you are using Linux, you probably don't need our help to get Java and Eclipse running yourself. Yep, that about sums it up. Smiley face.
Yep, that about sums it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think yes, it was put up with a little bit of a comical fashion, but the truth behind it, because in good comedy, there's always truth behind it. Linux people have a mental state of basically where they're much more prepared to figure something out.
Yes, yes.
We're in Mac and Windows, I'll just say the typical user, I think, expects to be very hand-holded.
Yes, yes.
That's not even a real word. You know what I mean.
Handheld.
Yes.
Yeah. I got you.
Not that that's good or bad.
Well,
it just is.
Let me take another spin on that analogy. In my experience, with certain Windows or Mac users, if they come upon a new piece of hardware or software they have to interface with, it's almost like you shut the lights off, and then all of a sudden they're in the dark. They're like, whoa, hey, I need some help here. Well, but no, you just do this. No. Yeah, I need some help. Okay, no problem. And with Mac, I mean, installing software could not be any easier. I mean, holy cow. But yeah, I mean, and that also goes, and that's not to say that the new Linux users won't run into some issues in the beginning, but after you start get used to searching for specific software or installing stuff from the command line, it's not, you don't have that terror fall over you. Just like, whoa, I gotta, you're just like, oh yeah, well, I've done this before. And you just read the instructions and you follow them from A to Z and then you're done. That's it.
Yeah, and I can tell you, if I was still a moderately new Linux person and I was going to go take this course, I know what my answer would be. If I needed Java and Eclipse, I would look for a distro that already has it bundled in.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just install that. Or I would install a distro I like and go to Synaptic or Ubuntu Software Center or whatever that package manager is and type in there, Java, Eclipse. And I would look through it and say, oh, it's right here in the repo. Click install. There are certain things that a lot of people don't point out that on Linux are so much easier than on Windows. People have a tendency to focus on what's harder or different. I like to admire the things that are easier.
And there you go. Okay, well, thank you very much, Rick, for sending in that good point in a funny way. And yes, it was funny. It made me chuckle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool.
He's a long-term guy who has always sent good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, that about ends the show for the week. I do want to mention once again, and we'll mention it in the next few shows, too, that Dora and I will both be at Ohio Linux Fest 2013. If you're planning on coming by, we're going to have a table set up there. That's 100% confirmed. I mean, 100% dead confirmed. We'll be giving away some merchandise, doing some meet and greets, and just hanging out. It'll kind of be our base of operations while we're there for at least Saturday. If you're planning on coming by, definitely come check it out. You can check out the schedule once they post it at ohiolinux.org under the 2013 schedule and see when the certain talks will happen. And they've nailed down some of their keynote speakers, which are, all three of them sound very fascinating. And one of the things I really want to do this year is attend a lot more talks than I did last year. I had to sleep through a couple that I really wanted to see, and then I had to choose, do I do this one or that one? But luckily they record all of their shows, and they get up on the internet eventually. But regardless, it's going to be a fun time. September 13th through the 15th. At the the Columbus Convention Center.
Yeah, the Greater Columbus Convention Center.
There you go, yeah. And we will we're going to set up a Google event page like we did last year. So anybody that is there will be able to send basically snap photos and send messages, and then anybody that logs into it will be able to read them and sort of see them as they come down live. So once we have some more information on that and set up, we'll definitely forward it out to you folks so you can check it out too.
Absolutely. And just super quick, I want to thank Professor Messer, and I'll say I know his name. Professor Messer went through and looked. That Network Administrator Guide ebook is from 2000, so I'm not going to read that. I will also say this. I know the Professor Messer by name because, A, I listen to podcasts he's on. I've watched work he's done. He's not an active college professor like other shows think he is because they don't know him. And I will say right now, if you just want flat-out education from someone educated, speaks well, very nice, very professional manner, you better get over and take a look at Professor Messer's website. That's M-E-S-S-E-R. Besides being a really nice guy, I think I'm publicly going to say right now, I'm going to ask him if he can give us a voice promo that I would like to at least add into the beginning or end of a show on Podnuts once in a while, because I would love to drive a little bit of, just a little bit of traffic towards him to make him feel a little bit better about Podnuts Network in general, because good people should support people that support them. Messer has been nothing but gracious to me and Podnuts and everyone I've ever met. So I thank Professor Messer for being who he is.
Very cool. Yeah. I haven't checked out his stuff in a while. I'll have to go check it out again.
Yeah, he says, I just play on the internet. It's full of crap, okay? Yeah.
He's just humble.
Like Network Plus certification videos where you can learn how to do all this stuff for F-R-E-E, free.
There you go. Well, Dor, where can we find you on the internet?
Well, before that, I will say, I've been spending a lot of time in the last couple weeks, when available, talking to a fellow, a man, a bro, a brella, a pal, a comrade.
Brosif.
By the name of Nick Shaw. Nick Shaw is the creator, maintainer, developer, owner, operator, guru, wizard, support staff, everything about the product called D7. Now, that's a Windows application. As Linux people, we tend to have many friends in the computing world. We live in computer worlds when we're in Linux. A lot of friends, family, spouses, children, whatever, run Windows. And we are the guy they think, well, you know computers. Come look at my computer, it ain't working. If you want to be literally a ninja at fixing Windows computers, without literally knowing all the different tools and all the different software and all the different techniques and all the different websites and all this crazy amount of stuff you really have to know to be on top of this industry, you need to go to foolishit.com, check out D7. He does have a free version. Now, the free version is very functional, very useful. I highly encourage it, if it makes your life easier fixing friends and family's computers, to try and support Nick and D7. This is his 9-to-5 job now. It's what he does full time. FoolishIT.com. Use the promo code PodNutsShow20. You will save 20%. I will say, again, I've had more than a couple companies try to throw money at PodNuts. Nick is begging constantly to throw more money at me, even though I still owe him more ads. That's not why I'm talking about him, and that's not why I'm talking good about him. Nick is a good guy. He's in this business. He's in this industry of fixing computers for a very long time, easy 10-plus years. He built this application from nothing on his own. He wore out keyboards doing this, okay, on his own. He knows the product in and out. Every technician I know, everyone I know a lot, who spends a little bit of time setting up the D7 configuration has said, by far, best time-saving app I've ever seen in my life. D7 allows you to automate it and relax. And if you want to do this as a side business, get paid while you automate and relax.
Nice.
I highly encourage you, just because it's a Windows product, don't be mad I'm advertising it on a Linux show. Linux people are the tweakers. We are the tinkerers. We are the people that love to get into a piece of software and do everything about it that we can. There's no Windows software I know of that is more better built for the Linux mentality. That's another thing I will say honestly, because if you look at those configuration screens, you have never in your life seen deeper configuration options and more configuration options than in D7. You don't believe me? I'll bet you a cheesesteak. Go ahead. Launch a VM, install Windows, download D7 Free Edition, look at the config.
Well, I actually have to go clean up my father-in-law's computer in the morning. Yay. So I'm gonna go get that free version, and if I end up liking it, and if I have a need for it, I'll get the paid version or kick him a donation or something. And I'll say this right now, and this is 100% true. Nick, if you make it to OLF, I will let you buy me a beer. You're welcome.
If Nick comes to OLF, I will buy him a Surf and Turf dinner. I will, just so it allows me more time to chat with him.
Yeah, I got that same Surf and Turf dinner last year. It was a can of tuna and a sleeve of Ritz, not even the full box.
You're not supposed to say it out loud.
Not even the full box. He's that cheap.
Okay, fine. I'll take him to the finest Scottish restaurant in town.
Okay, great.
And between us, that's McDonald's.
I thought it was McTarnahan's. Damn it. Okay. So, Dor, where can we find you on the internet?
Podhouse.com. Hey, mail at podhouse.com. Yeah. Stephen McLaughlin on Google+. You want to contact me, contact me. The best way to contact me is, unfortunately, the way with the slowest response. I will say that is the email. I now get a good amount of email. And if I don't respond to someone, I feel like I am literally the scum on the earth that kills babies for a living. So I respond to everyone, which means it might take me 4+ days to respond to everyone.
Yeah. He doesn't even respond to my emails. I need to call him. Like, hey, no. Hey, deadbeat, guess what?
No, I just send you a Voxer message.
Yeah.
In the middle of cooking dinner or something. Hey, Cody, by the way. And, you know,
well, it's funny. When I talked, this happened last week, or maybe it was with Martin. I can't. But anyway, we'll usually start a conversation, email, take it over to Voxer, then we'll text, and then we'll, you know, get on Google Talk or Hangout. It's funny. But yeah, definitely, yes. Send in any emails to the show, mail@podinst.com. We are...
For the show, podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com.
Oh, but mail@podinst.com for you. Okay. Got it. Yes. Yeah, and we do have a few more emails piled up, which we'll get to next week. But yes, if you do want to send an email specifically to this show, send it to podcast@linuxtherestofus.com. We will read it on the show. If you have a voicemail, please send it, call into 7076-PODNUT. That's PODNUT. And you can leave us a voicemail. We will play it live on the show. We love hearing from our listeners. If you want to contact me, you can email me at cody@podnuts.com, or you can hit me up on Google+. I've had a lot of people add me on there recently. I thank you for that. I've been sending more updates lately, so I'm putting out some better content on there, and I have some things in the works which will result in even more Google+ posts and more posts within our Google community, which you can check out. We have one for Podnuts in general, and we also have one for Android App Addicts and for Mobile Dynasty and for Linux the Rest of Us.
Yeah, I completely forgot for weeks to mention we have a Google+ community.
Yes.
Hey, if there's another place people want to meet besides a Google+ community, you got to tell me. And again, if enough people say it, that's where we'll meet. If you say it's a BBS server hosted in New Zealand, I will log into a BBS server in New Zealand and communicate with
you. But you have to do it with Commodore hardware.
Then I'm not doing it.
I'll send you one.
Emulated, I can do emulated.
There you go.
It's an operating system.
Do you think
they'll be able to tell?
Maybe. I got a 128 sitting right here. I'm good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'll get you a 64. Based on the Surf and Turf dinner. Also, we got some great guests lined up for Podnuts Daily, and we've had some great guests recently. So if you have not listened to that show recently, definitely go check it out. If you would like to be a guest on Podnuts Daily or Podnuts, either talk about your business or a product for a company you happen to represent, please send me an email to cody@podnuts.com, and I will send you a list of available dates. Really, really do appreciate that.
Last mention.
Yep.
Thank Richard Hughes from Tilt for Google Talk private messaging me this. Right now, accessiblecomputingfoundation.org, the same as the acf.co. Go there, click on the blog. There's an entry called Almost There. As of, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago, Jonathan posted this, and he did not say anything to us. For the past few months, the ACF has been working with a lawyer to get our 501c3 tax-exempt status. I know he applied for it. I know he was told he was going to get it, okay? But what I come to find out is we now have all the paperwork done and are in the final stages. Next up is filing our official paperwork with the IRS. That's where you all can come in. The filing fee is $400. So far, we have had someone answer the call and become a $20 a month subscriber. So as of right now today, there's $380 more dollars needed to achieve this task.
Even less because it took my money out last week. Thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Gotcha. Well,
best money I spend every month.
I really cannot encourage people enough. Don't go to a Kickstarter or a Indiegogo or something supporting or promoting, let's just say, things that don't have a completely worldly benefit. And if you can, as a personal favor, I ask you, please, can you help out Jonathan? Help out the Accessible Computing Foundation. Help future kids and people with disabilities to have an easier time accessing a computer.
Mm-hmm. And another thing he didn't mention to us, which I caught on social media, is that the little dude, he's podcasting again.
Yeah.
So we'll have him on Podnuts in one way or another soon, and we'll talk to him about that and get some updates, because he's also got something in development through the ACF, which Dora and I know about, that is very exciting. So very, very looking forward to that as well. But yes, please go over to the acf.co. You can do a one-time donation or sign up to be a monthly donator. I believe the $2 a month is a minimum, then it bumps it to 10, 20, 50, or anything in between. But yeah, every single penny helps, especially when they're trying to gain this status. So yeah, every little bit helps. Go check him out. He does awesome work. And I believe that is it for the entire... Yeah, that's it, folks. I just literally saw like the Looney Tunes thing come up, you know, like the curtain and the big letters. But the show is done now. I'm just rambling. Thank you very
much. But you're doing great.
I appreciate that, Dor. So thanks for listening. We will be back next week. We only have two or three more shows left before the big shebang, and we'll keep you guys posted. I'll talk to you guys soon, and please remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Do you sit on your butt all day? Are you tired of watching the weight pile on? Are you sick of what you see in the mirror and just too busy to do anything about it? The 28 Workouts Fitness Program was created with you in mind. Shed the weight and get into the best shape of your life. Workouts are only 25 minutes per day, no more than 4 days per week. No gym needed, no equipment needed. Instant download. Go to www.28workouts.com today for more details. Your time is now. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.